Jermaine Paul Maurice has got them playing with a real purpose. They don't get take themselves out of games with needless penalties. They're patient playing without the puck, and we know that they can really put up the offense. Connor Hellebuck has been outstanding. So this is a team that, to me, the expectations going into this league this year was high. They're meeting them for sure.
Craig Button discussing the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bottom of the hour is come and gone, halfway through the Saturday morning edition of this program. We continue our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets through the quarter mark of the season. We have to wrap up the defense, and we do so by talking about Jacob Trouba. We know Jacob is going to be a restricted free agent at season's end. Gentlemen, he has one goal and six assists for 7 points through 22 games this year. Your thoughts on Jacob Trouba so far, as he's played in all the games for the Jets, matching, exceeding, or underachieving your expectations so far?
For me, Jacob Trouba's underachieving my expectations, and you know, it's not just the lack of goals or assist. I think at times Jacob Trouba has looked lost on the ice, and when he's paired up with Josh Morrissey, Josh Morrissey has been kind of that galvanizing presence on the ice. And you know, Jacob Trouba, it's a big year for him. He's in the last year of his contract, and, you know, he wants the big deal coming up. But, you know, you expect Trouba to be a guy that, you know, leads the rush and does everything out there for you. So, for me, he's underachieving my expectations.
Yeah, I'm with Ezra on this one. He doesn't seem to be the Jacob Trouba that we're used to seeing. And you know, there was a stat put up yesterday that the numbers are fairly similar in terms of his goals percent for the first 25 games last year as they were this year. But, like, overall, I just watched Jacob Trouba, and he just doesn't seem to be the Jacob Trouba we're used to seeing. And I think what it comes to is really his play with the puck. I mean, he's made so many errors that have, unfortunately for the Jets, have resulted in goals against. So, you know, it's I think it's because we have such high expectations for him as a player that he clearly hasn't met them so far to date in this year.
Especially coming off such a good year that he had last year. I want to read Paul Maurice's quote from Wednesday night's game in Los Angeles post game, where Trouba was, you know, shifted the defensive pairings. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. This is Paul Maurice. Jake Trouba is transitioning with Josh Morrissey to play against the other team's best. You saw it in the last two games, and that's not an easy assignment. Some nights it's there for you, and some nights it's not. We just felt at the 10-minute mark of the first period, it didn't look like it was going to be easy for Trouba. You can't play against Kopitar and not be on your A game, so we made the adjustment. That was when Paul Maurice put Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey together midway through the first period on Wednesday. Sort of, I think, a bit of a telling quote from Paul Maurice about Jacob Trouba's game and where it's been at various times this season. Toby Enstrom is currently on the injured reserve list. He did play 19 games for the Jets before going out injured. 0 goals, 2 assists for 2 points. Toby Enstrom, is he matching, exceeding, or underachieving?
I'd probably say matching. You know, he's been fairly solid. He has no goals and 2 assists. As you mentioned, Drew, but, you know, they definitely miss him. You know, Ben Chiarot, I think, has been pretty solid since going back into the lineup. But, you know, Toby Enstrom, I think, you know, he gives you, you know, that puck-rushing defenseman. And, you know, I think at this point in his career, you don't expect much offense out of him, so he's matched my expectations.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the fact is that, you know, his numbers have decreased offensively over the last few years, but you've kind of taken away from that is that he's still that fairly steadying presence, especially when he's playing with Dustin Byfuglien on the back end. So, you know, he gets kind of knocked around in this market, no pun intended, for the fact that he's, you know, a little smaller than average. But I still think, like, positionally he's fairly sound, and he makes, you know, fairly smart decisions when he has the puck. So, you know, the Jets are usually better off when they have Toby Enstrom in the, you know, obviously not top, but, you know, moving down the line, and the fact is that he's able to kind of complement Dustin Byfuglien. So I would say he's matched my expectations for the season.
Let's shift to goaltending, where we know that this has been a high point for the Winnipeg Jets this season, especially with Connor Hellebuyck, who, you know, ostensibly was going to be the backup to Steve Mason this year. Well, Hellebuyck has been nothing if not absolutely fantastic. 12-2-2, a 928 save percentage, and a 2.36 goals against average. I mean, I think it's probably a pretty clear exceeding expectations for Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah, I think we're all going to agree that he's exceeding expectations, and, you know, we expected Steve Mason to play more games for the Jets this year, and you know the opposite has occurred. And you know Connor Hellebuyck has had very few poor games. I'd look at maybe the Vegas game as being his worst game of the year, that game that they lost in Vegas. But for the most part, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck has been absolutely rock solid. His numbers have been excellent all year. And as we talked about during the first hour, every time that he's had a quote-unquote bad game this year, he's responded very well. So for me, it's an easy plus one. You'd give him a plus two if you could.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Connor Hellebuyck has been a plus one on this team for all the reasons as you just illustrated.
Steve Mason, of course, was signed in the offseason. You know, obviously had the rocky start to the year with those first two games against Toronto and Calgary. So far, he's got a 907 save percentage and a 3.31 goals against average. Interesting, though, if you take away those first two games and you only look at the other five games he's played, four of which where he's been the starter, a 940 save percentage and a 2.06 goals against average. So how would you evaluate Steve Mason at this point? As
I'd say he's underperforming expectations for me, but as you mentioned, really it's those first two games of the season that really hurt Steve Mason. So if you take those first two games out, I'd probably say he's matching expectations, or maybe, you know, he's still underperforming expectations because you expected him to play more games than Connor Hellebuyck. But as of late, he's certainly been very good, played very well in his last start for the Jets against the LA Kings. And you know, he was the first star of that game, and he was very good against Arizona previous to that when the Jets won 4-1 on the road. So for me, I'm going to say, you know, underperforming expectations, but not by much.
Yeah, there's not really a lot to talk about with Steve Mason. You had an anticipation that he was going to come in and fight Connor Hellebuyck for that number one role. Didn't obviously succeed in doing that because Connor Hellebuyck assumed the mantle as of the first goalie on the ice most nights. So Steve Mason is probably underperformed in my expectation from what I anticipated, but I wasn't expecting him to be head and tails above Connor Hellebuyck. I just anticipated that he would be probably more what we're seeing now. This is kind of what you were thinking, that when the Jets signed him, this is what you were going to get. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're basing on the totality of the season, not just on the last game or last couple of games. So in the totality, I'd say he's either he's in that gray area between matched and underperformed.
The power play for the Winnipeg Jets is 7th in the NHL at this point in time, clicking at a rate of 22.9%. You know, that was actually before yesterday's game.
They're fourth in the NHL
now after the two power play goals yesterday. 24.6% the Jets are clicking at, matching, exceeding, or underachieving for the Jets' power play, Ezzy.
I would say you have to go exceeding expectations, and I did think that the special teams would be better this year. Actually, if you read my article, I said the Jets' power play would be top 10. You can go check that. That was back in I believe, late August or September.
Little site called LegalCurve.com.
So, for me, it's not a surprise. I mean, look at the firepower this team has out there. Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, guys. We know who they can put out there on a night-in and night-out basis. So I think it was just a matter of time before these guys were going to start producing. So I'm going to say exceeding expectations.
Yeah, I would, despite the fact that they scored, what did they score, like 11 power play goals in the preseason, so they're, and then they started off the regular season, it sputtered and they didn't have a lot, and again, it was just a function of getting the personnel kind of tweaked and worked in the way they wanted, because as Ez just touched on, they really do have a tremendous amount of firepower, but it still exceeded my expectations. I didn't know that they would be a top five power play in the NHL, so. They've exceeded.
The penalty kill is up to 19th now after being at the bottom for the majority of the season. 79% success rate on the penalty kill. Matching, exceeding, or underachieving, Ezra?
I would say that the penalty kill is matching expectations. We've talked about the penalty kill quite a bit over the years. The penalty kill was bottom five in the league this year. It was higher earlier in the season, but I think especially as of late, the penalty kill has been improved. And, you know, I like Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler out there at times. And, you know, we've talked about how good Brandon Tanev and Matt Hendricks have been. So I'm going to say it's matched expectations.
Dave?
You know, last year they had the 26th ranked penalty kill in the league. I think that they're incorporating new personnel into it. I would say it's probably where I expected. They've improved of late for sure. It's gotten better. So I would say it's met my expectations.
Last one for you, gentlemen, as we've pretty much covered the majority of the players who've played every game or the majority of the ice time for the Winnipeg Jets, the man behind the bench, Paul Maurice, certainly had the spotlight shining bright on him entering the year. Losses in the first two games, embarrassments in the first two games, but since then it's been a tremendous run for the Winnipeg Jets. 14-3-3 since those two games that opened the year with losses. Matt Paul Maurice, matching, exceeding, or underachieving?
I would say that he's matched expectations. I thought that the Jets were going to be better this year, and I could easily see Dave saying that Paul Maurice has exceeded expectations for this team. But, you know, you talked about how they started off, and we thought, oh, here we go again. You know, the Jets are not going to be a playoff team, and, you know, they're going to be undisciplined, and they're going to be taking penalties, and the special teams aren't going to be better. But lo and behold, the power play is top five in the league, and the Jets are tied for third overall in the NHL. So when a team is winning, it's hard not to praise the head coach. And, you know, Paul Maurice and the entire coaching staff deserves a lot of credit. I think, you know, at times this team has been underachieving at 5-on-5, so that's probably why I don't give Paul Maurice the exceeding expectations, because I think this team still leaves a little bit more to be desired 5-on-5, but the special teams and the discipline, I think Paul Maurice has to take some of the credit for that, because that was his big criticism last year, that this team took way too many penalties and the special teams weren't good.
I want to go in between matching and exceeding.
You somehow made your own gray area.
Yeah, well, no, because the truth is there are areas in which he's gotten a lot more out of the team than I anticipated, but mm-hmm. there are areas still that need to be improved. But the truth is, when you have the talent level that Paul Maurice has, it's hard not to get a lot out of this group. I mean, look at this lineup. It's one of the most talented lineups in the NHL, top to bottom. So, and when you get the goaltending you're getting, and you have the defense you have, and you have the relative health that you have, it's hard to give that you're exceeding expectation when you have a group of this caliber. So I can't necessarily give him excelling expectations, except from the fact that he's gotten more in certain areas. But overall, I'd say he's definitely matched my expectations.
That's it for the Jets and their matching or the determination of their expectations through the quarter mark of the season. When we come back, we'll look at the NHL award winners, our NHL award winners at the quarter mark of the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Who, Dan, is the most surprising team in the NHL thus far in the season?
The Vancouver Canucks are my pick. They're tied for most road wins in the NHL.
For me, Dan, it's the New Jersey Devils. Who could have predicted this team would be second in the Metropolitan? Yeah, this team had the first overall pick this past June. The
most surprising player for you.
Okay, for me, Dan, it's Connor Hellebuck. Another shout-out to Randy Turner on this one. Connor Hellebuck's been sensational for the Jets. Finally, the Jets have the goaltending they needed to be an elite team in the league.
Most disappointing player.
It's Brent Burns. Brent Burns with 29 goals last year. Brent Burns, zero goals.
My most disappointing player, Bernie Federko. He's got over 1,000 points in the NHL. 0 points this season so far.
That's Jay and Dan. You can watch them every night at 11, of course, on TSN. Always giving a shout-out to Randy Turner, which I certainly appreciated after Randy was right with his little Twitter rant about the love affair for Austin Matthews. So those guys, of course, Jay, especially with his ties to Winnipeg, and Randy certainly go way back. But Randy was 100% correct with that Twitter Twitter tweet that he sent out. If you didn't see it, you can follow Randy on Twitter and you will be entertained. I can assure you of that. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, maybe an Austin Matthews jersey, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. We've spent much of the first hour and 45 minutes of the show talking about the Winnipeg Jets at the quarter season mark. Going to spend the next 10 or so minutes talking about the NHL at the quarter season mark. Your award winners at the quarter season mark. We start with the Hart Trophy because that's the one that's awarded to the most valuable player. And most people say that it's a battle between Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov at this point in time. Do you agree with that? Stamkos 36 points, Kucherov 34 points. Is it between those two guys for MVP of the NHL right now?
Yeah, they're certainly in the discussion. I'm actually going to give the Hart Trophy to Johnny Gaudreau. And, you know, I think Stamkos and Kucherov are going to split the vote if it turns out that, you know, they're both, you know, top five in the league in scoring. But Johnny Gaudreau has been absolutely on fire. And I think if it wasn't for what Stamkos and Kucherov are doing, more people would be talking about Johnny Gaudreau. But the Flames had a bit of a slow start to the season, but he's been absolutely on fire. The amount of multiple point games he's had already this year is mind-boggling. So for me, it's Johnny Gaudreau.
Yeah, Gaudreau tied with Kucherov for second in points, 34 points in 22 games for the Calgary Flames winger.
I'd go with Kucherov. I think he's been just phenomenal. I was reading a stat. I think he's drawn like 14 penalties for the Lightning, and the Lightning have a lethal power play. So, you know, that definitely helps with the team. And, you know, they've just been rolling since the outset of the season. So I'm going to go with Kucherov, a little bit of a chalk pick on that one.
Vezina Trophy for the best goaltender in the NHL. We heard Jay and Dan talk up Connor Hellebuck. He's been absolutely fantastic for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Sergei Bobrovsky has been terrific for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and Andrei Vasilevsky has also been terrific for the league-leading Tampa Bay Lightning. Ezzy, who wins the Vezina to your mind at this point in time? More of a wide-open race. You know, Carey Price certainly has been injured and hasn't played well, so he's certainly not in the discussion where we're so used to seeing him in the discussion for the Vezina Trophy.
Yeah, you're right. You expect Carey Price to be there every year. For me, it's Andrei Vasilevsky. He's leading the league in wins, and you know, Dave talked about how good the Tampa Bay Lightning have been all year. I think Connor Hellebuck is certainly in the discussion. I could listen to an argument, you know, that Connor Hellebuck should win the Vezina Trophy. But, you know, for me, it's so impressive what Andrei Vasilevsky is doing in his second full year in the NHL. And that's similar to Connor Hellebuck. This is his second full year in the NHL. But I think you're starting to see a little bit of a, you know, a changing of the guard amongst goaltenders. But, you know, Vasilevsky's numbers are absolutely incredible. So I'm going to go with the young Russian goaltender.
I'm going to go with, what about Bob? I'm going with Sergei Bobrovsky. I think that he's just been spectacular for Columbus. He's been everything that this team needs, right? Like, he's just been that setting force. I think if you look at the one goaltending metric I tend to look at is goals saved above average, and he leads that with a 13.91. Vasilevsky's right there as well. So those two guys are kind of the class of the NHL right now in that category. So I'm going to go with What About Bob for the Vezina.
The Norris Trophy is, of course, awarded to the best defenseman in the NHL. And this one, you know, sort of interesting. We talked about Brent Burns and how he's so far had only one goal on the year. He just got that goal very recently. So a guy who won the Vezina last year probably isn't in the running at this point this year. You know, Erik Karlsson is always, his name's always front and center. Alex Pietrangelo is having a great season for the St. Louis Blues. Ezzy, who is taking away the Vezina Trophy so far this season for you? Pardon me, the Norris Trophy so far this season for you?
Yeah, for me, it's Alex Pietrangelo, and we're obviously talking about, you know, a quarter of the season here, but, you know, Alex Pietrangelo won a gold medal with Canada at the 2014 Olympics. He's always been an underrated defenseman for me. He was excellent in the first two rounds of last year's playoffs for the St. Louis Blues, and you mentioned, you know, Brent Burns has not had the numbers that you'd expect out of him, and same goes for Erik Karlsson, but, you know, anybody that's watched the St. Louis Blues over the last 5, 6, 7 years knows that Pietrangelo has been their top defenseman for that long. So for me, it's Pietrangelo.
Dave?
I'm concurring with Ez on this one. I think he's playing over 26 minutes a night. He's facing, you know, some of the best every single night for the St. Louis Blues, and he's shown that he can handle it, and he's, you know, putting up points as well for his club. So for me, it's Pietrangelo.
Calder Trophy is an interesting one. We were talking about this a little bit off air. Kyle Connor would be the Jets nominee if every team, you know, had a nominee for the Calder Trophy. He's sitting 12th in rookie scoring with 6 goals, 6 assists. You know, Clayton Keller was getting all the publicity earlier in the year for the Arizona Coyotes, probably the lone bright spot for the Coyotes at a point in time. Since then, he's fallen off the pace a little bit, which is now being set by Brock Besser in Vancouver and Matthew Barzal on Long Island with the Islanders. Ezzy, who do you have so far winning the Calder Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, for me, it's Brock Besser, and you know, I have to give myself a pat on the back.
That's twice now you've given yourself pats on the back.
Yeah, in my hockey pool this year, I took Brock Besser and Matthew Barzal as my rookies, and they're second and third in rookie scoring right now. Pardon me, actually first and second in rookie scoring.
Just let me interrupt you there for a second. You get credit for that. Where do you currently rank in the hockey draft you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm not doing as well, but I'm pretty happy to have picked those two guys. So, you know, I got a chance to see Brock Besser a couple times at the University of North Dakota. I know Dave did as well. And, you know, he was a standout for UND. And, you know, he was a healthy scratch earlier this season. And he's just been phenomenal. He seems to find himself on the score sheet every night. So for me, it's Brock Besser.
I'm going to go with the other guy, as mentioned, Matthew Barzal. I just think that what he's been able to do on Long Island has been impressive. And, you know, he had that five-point night against the Colorado Avalanche in the season, and that kind of got everyone talking about him and really the focus on him. I like what he's done, and, you know, but, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with Brock Besser. I mean, I watched Brock Besser, as just said, at UND, and he's just clearly was such a talent for the Sioux. So, you know, that's a toss-up. I think either guy or even Clinton Keller. I mean, look, he was off to such a hot start. Everyone was handing him the Calder right out of the gate, and now he's kind of slowed down a little bit, although, ironically, the Coyotes are winning now. But I think that there's a it's a long race. It's a tough one, but I think there's three good choices that are clear frontrunners right now.
Edmonton Oilers fans cringe every time they see Matthew Barzal, of course, on the score sheet, as he was, you know, the Oilers traded that pick to the Islanders that they used to acquire Barzal in exchange for Griffin Reinhart. Well, Reinhart, we know, certainly has not panned out as an NHL defenseman. Meanwhile, Barzal is tearing things up on Long Island.
I think Will Butcher deserves an honorable mention as well.
Will Butcher, of course, the defenseman for the New Jersey Devils that they signed as a free agent after he was drafted by the Avalanche. They chose not to sign him. He went to New Jersey and has been a tremendously steady.
Well, I would say they chose not to sign him. He chose not to sign with them.
You're right. Bad turn of phrase by yours truly. Butcher has been a steadying influence on the Devils' back end. The Devils certainly one of the surprise teams in the NHL so far, as they are second in the Metropolitan Division. Jack Adams Award for Coach of the Year. Who in your mind right now is deserving of that award, Ezzy?
I think there's a lot of great candidates. I'm going to go with John Hines of the New Jersey Devils. They didn't have much expectations heading into the season, and you thought that, you know, the injury to Travis Zajac was going to be devastating for them, so I'm going to go with John Hines.
I'm going to go with Gerard Gallant. I don't think anybody had any expectations that Vegas was going to do what they've done and what he's managed to do, and everyone expects the bubble to burst, and it hasn't, and they're still first in the Pacific Division. I mean, you got to give the coach credit for what he's been able to do with a team that wasn't a team up until the summer.
Yeah, no doubt. I think if from the Winnipeg Jets perspective, if you were looking for the Jets to get some love, Paul Maurice will probably get some acknowledgement in that category for the way he has the Jets playing, at least through the quarter mark of the season. It is still a long year, so we'll have to see how this all plays out. But for now, as we sit here on the 25th of November, that's where we are in terms of the award winners in the NHL. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kyle Keefe. Kyle covers the Colorado Avalanche. The Jets are into Colorado, into Denver on Wednesday night to meet the Avs for the first time this year. We talk to Kyle next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Kyle Keefe. Kyle is the Colorado Avalanche studio host and reporter. The Jets into Denver on Wednesday to meet the Avalanche. Kyle, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, Kyle. How about yourself?
Doing good. We would be better if we'd have gotten 2 points last night, but doing all right.
Okay, well, the Avalanche, I think, Kyle, for most people would say that they've had a pretty good start to the year in that they've won more than half their games so far, 11 wins in the 21 games they've played. For a team coming off such a horrendous season last year, is there sort of cautious optimism maybe in Denver thus far?
Well, that's a good question. I would tend to not even think that it's cautious optimism. I would say it's legitimate optimism. It's a different team. It's a different mindset, and you can feel it in the locker. You could feel it in the locker room last year. I mean, to be honest, we were not good. I mean, we were an easy team to beat last year, and I think this year it is a. It's a different emotion in the locker room. There's a different belief. I think that comes from a lot of the older guys, the Eric Johnsons and the Gabe Landeskogs. And I think that they truly believe that they were a better team last year. And once you get behind the eight ball and you start losing games and it starts to go downhill a little bit, it's easy to sort of look the other direction and almost pretend like it's not happening. But this year it's different. I think there is definitely a winning culture, a winning attitude that's in the locker room, and they believe that they could be a playoff team, especially in the toughest division, I think, in maybe professional sports, not just hockey, but in sports. The Central Division is rough. So I think there's a real true optimism that this team could rally and make the playoffs.
Kyle, I think you'd agree that Nathan MacKinnon is back to the level where we expected him to be at leading the Colorado Avalanche in scoring. What differences have you seen in his game this year from last year?
He's shooting. I think that's number one. He's aggressive. And last year, sometimes when he'd be tentative and maybe bring the puck into the zone and then sort of look for support. He's looking to score, and I think his line, being on a line with Landeskog and Rantanen has changed. I mean, it's changed everything. It's changed our team. It's a lethal line right now. You look at Kucherov and Stamkos and what they're doing in Tampa Bay. This is I don't want to compare the two. Obviously, it's not it's hard to compare anybody to that. But that line is special, and having MacKinnon, play with. I think our two best guys, our two most talented players, is a legitimate threat. So I think that he's shooting more. I think that he's looking to make plays more. He's having fun. I mean, there's no doubt about it that Nathan MacKinnon is having fun playing hockey again. And last year you didn't see that. I don't think he saw it from any player, but I think he's. This is what we had hoped. This is what we expected from Nathan MacKinnon. And I think in his last. Boy, 10 games prior to last night, he was 20 points or, he's off the charts right now, and he's making plays, and the boys around him are rallying.
Kyle, between the Jets and the Avalanche, they have two-thirds of the University of Michigan CCM line. The Jets, obviously, with Kyle Connor, and Avs with JT Compher. Compher split his time, much like Kyle Connor, between the AHL and the NHL last season. How has he looked so far to you in his sophomore year with the Avs?
Well, I don't know if you saw him last night. I mean, he had a shorty, first of all, but then he had a grade A scoring chance in the third period that he came down and Stalock stopped him on the first go at it, and he basically whiffed the puck on his second attempt. It would have been a game winner, but Jared Bednar had enough confidence in him and the other rookies to put them on a. Put them out there in OT 3-on-3 with Cam Girard and Kerfoot. I mean, so he's Bednar loves him. I mean, he is a legitimate threat, and he likes the way that he plays both ends of the ice. He's a great penalty killer. Not afraid to get dirty. He's fast. He can rip the puck. He's got a good attitude. The boys like him in the locker room, and so I JT is he's really impressed all of us. This season with sort of his take on what kind of player he's going to be. He does not sit back at all and wait for someone else to make the play. He's definitely a go-getter and a guy that you want on your team.
Kyle Keefe is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kyle is the Colorado Avalanche studio host and a reporter for the team. Kyle, you mentioned Jared Bednar. Obviously, this is his second year as Avs head coach. He was brought in an almost impossible situation last year when Patrick Waugh, you know, resigned very late in the off season. How has Jared Bednar, you know, grown into the job in his second year as Avs bench boss?
Well, I think they started to believe him in his system. And last night he said this. I mean, he was like, he was asked about the loss. And even though it was a loss, it was a hell of a hockey game. I mean, it was back and forth. And last night he said, you know, I believe the boys are starting to believe in the system. And that takes time. It's not like you can come in and take over for a Patrick Waugh or a Mark Crawford or a Joel Quenneville. You know, it's not easy being the head coach of a hockey team, especially when you have, you know, a month to prepare and get to training camp and know the guys and know the team. So I think he's really starting to be able to coach, and that takes time, as you well know. So I think the boys are starting to learn that, you know, it's a run and gun system, but it's responsible in your own zone. It's different from line to line. Different guys have to play a different way. And when you're winning, you guys know this. When you're winning, it makes it everything's easier, especially with the Winnipeg Jets, you know, that are, you know, off the charts right now. Just terrific hockey team. So it's when you can believe in your coach and you can believe in the system and you can sort of look around the locker room and feel like it's working, then I think everybody gets on board.
Kyle, have you noticed significant differences in attitude on this team since Matt Duchene was traded?
Yes, 100%. 100%. And I love Matt Duchene. I think I thought he was a great guy and a super player. But yes, I have noticed a huge difference in just sort of people taking responsibility for the position that they play, the players that they are. I think that it's a fresh start. It's a fresh start for Matt in Ottawa. It's a fresh start for the guys here in Colorado. I think it was pretty apparent that everybody came out and said, "Look, we want guys that want to play here," and that's a pretty good indication of how they felt about it. And it was a situation that got uncomfortable, and everybody wanted to move on. Us in the media, the players, whether he was going to stay or go, it was a situation that they just wanted to be done with. And I think it was good for Matt. It was good for the team. And yes, clearly I can see a difference in the way they play, their attitude, their sort of thoughts on the game. So in the end, it was good for everybody.
Kyle, you've talked about how the team has a belief in itself and how they see themselves as a playoff team. This is a team that's only reached the playoffs, I think, once in the last 6 or 7 years. How are the fans in Denver reacting to this young, energetic, and fun to watch Colorado team?
I think you used the right words, a hesitant optimism. I think that's probably a good way to put it amongst the fans. I'm a little bit different just because, you know, I did 82, 81 games last year, and it was rough. I mean, it was hard to do 5 hours of television when you're losing, you know, 62 times a year. I mean, you guys have been through it. It's tough. It's tough to cover a team that is losing all the time. But I think the fans, the real true hockey fans here in Colorado, love this team regardless. But at the end of the day, you got to win hockey games. You got to win at home. And they're terrific at home. They're 7-1-1 here in Denver. They're scoring goals. They have exciting games. There's, you know, the power play is great at home. They seem to light up here, and that's most important. Now they got to figure out things on the road, because I think they're 4-7-1 now on the road. So you don't make the playoffs if you're not at least a 500 club on the road, which is in the Central Division is just, I mean, you got to be. It's ridiculous in the Central Division. I mean, the Avs have a pretty good record and are close to last. You know, so it's unlike anything I've ever seen right now. The parity in the NHL is unbelievable, with the exception of maybe St. Louis and even Winnipeg. And and Tampa Bay, everybody else is, you know, right there. So you got to win games on the road, and you have to be dominant at home.
Kyle Keefe is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kyle covers the Colorado Avalanche as their studio host and reporter. Kyle, the goaltending hasn't been great for the Avalanche this year. Varlamov at a .903 save percentage. Bernier at a .901 save percentage. You know, is that an area of concern for Jared Bednar, that he needs to get better goaltending if the team wants to make and stay within a playoff race?
Yeah, you know, I would disagree with you. I would say that you know, numbers are numbers, and there's a responsibility by the defense first. You know, and our biggest issue last year was the blue line, and so it's a work in progress. And I certainly think that Sam Girard has helped that. EJ's come into his own, and he's probably having his best year of hockey. And the newspaper is not going to tell you that, and the box score is not going to tell you that, because the points aren't necessarily there for him, but he's playing his best hockey. But when you look at the goaltending, I mean, Varley right now, Varley had the flu for the last 3 or 4 days, but Bernie's been outstanding. Even in his losses, he's been terrific. In the 4-3 OT win against Detroit, he had two goals that were both tips, and which he had no chance on stopping. He battled back and had a 3-0 shutout against Dallas. And I thought last night, even though they lost, they could have been scored on 5 times in OT, and Bernie stood on his head. He's an exceptional backup goaltender. In my mind, he's a starting goaltender in the National Hockey League. And right now, I don't think you can count many teams that have a backup that is as sharp as Jonathan Bernier. And Varley, you know, we go as Varley goes. If he's good, we win. If he's not, we don't. And so I would disagree with you and say that the goaltending is not an issue. It's actually one of our strengths, and it's more of, you know, protecting your goaltender and limiting shots and getting sticks in lanes and blocking shots. And like I said, it's a work in progress, but I would definitely disagree with you and say that goaltending is not an issue.
Kyle, Mikko Rantanen is quietly having a nice year for the Avalanche, but should anybody be surprised considering that he was one of the lone bright spots for the team last year?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. I mean, Mikko, I mean, he's a big dude. And he's, you know, he's probably 6'3", 220, 225 maybe. I mean, I don't know what they say on the stat line, but he's bigger than what you would think. And, you know, again, it's that line. It's magic on the line. If you think about it, Gabe's a big old guy that's going to get dirty in the corners, and he's going to get greasy in the crease, and McKinnon's got all that speed, and he's got super hands. And then you got Mikko that's sort of a mixture of both. And for some reason, that line is really clicking, and I think that Mikko and his personality, which is he's a fun-loving guy. I mean, he's an absolute pleasure to be around. I mean, he's never in a bad mood. Win, lose, tie, raining, snow. You know, he's just a really good. And most Finns are. You know, he's easy to be around. He's very likable, and it shows on the ice. You know, even he works his tail off on the ice, and I think it's paying off for me. Such a young guy, and I think for second year players, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think for second year players, he's, you know, he's top 2, top 3 right now in points. So he's definitely benefiting from the line that he's on, but I think it's also an attitude that he brings every morning to the rink, and an attitude that he carries away from the rink. He's you know, he's a tremendous person and a tremendous, obviously a hockey player, but I think he's reaping the rewards of a lot of hard work and the way he was raised up.
Kyle, one player who seems to have his career somewhat rejuvenated under Coach Bednar is Nail Yakupov. He's got 7 goals, which is over double what he had last year in 40 with St. Louis. So what has Coach Bednar been able to do with Nail that's kind of gotten him going this season?
Well, let me tell you this. First of all, his nickname is Terry. We always thought it was going to be Hammer or whatever, but Tyson Berry came up with the nickname Terry.
Terry?
Kind of silly. T- Terry, yeah. It's like teriyaki. They call him Terry.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. So, whatever. But it's kind of funny because they've really taken to him and they've sort of welcomed him in because this was, you know, if it's not his last hurrah, it's certainly one of his, you know, this is an opportunity for him to play. He, in Edmonton was, you know, it wasn't what they expected in Edmonton. They weren't a very good team. And then in St. Louis, he kind of got lost in the shuffle and wasn't getting the minutes that he wanted. And here, again, this is an opportunity for a lot of guys in Colorado to sort of show who they are and how they can play. And he's getting quality minutes. He's getting power play time. He's obviously got great hands. He's quick. And what I like most about him, guys, is that he is not afraid to shoot the puck. I mean, sometimes you get these guys that are always looking to make the extra pass or make the pretty play, and Yakupov is not that guy. I mean, he will flat out shoot the puck. He had a goal the other night. We had 1.9 seconds left on the clock, and he pounded it in with 0.2, and it was a beautiful play off the draw from Nathan MacKinnon. And he's been a real positive here in Colorado, and obviously the fans like him, and I think the coaching staff appreciates what he brings to the team.
And Kyle Keefe covers the Colorado Avalanche as their studio host and reporter. Kyle, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, boys, we'll see you guys here in a little bit when we take on the Jets.
Yes, Wednesday night, the Jets into Denver to play the Avs. Kyle, again, thank you so much.
Okay, see you guys.
When we come back, we preview tonight's Jets-Sharks game. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Sharks will end up with a win here. Stop this little slump at home. There's a shot to the empty net.
Jets and the Sharks tonight in San Jose, a 9 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290. It's all part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. The San Jose Sharks are first meeting against the Jets so far this season. The Sharks out of a playoff spot presently, but only by a point in the competitive Pacific Division. 11-8-2 the San Jose Sharks are through their first 21 games this year. And you look at the Sharks team as, and they're sort of interesting. They are 31st in the NHL in goals for, meaning they've scored the fewest goals in the entire NHL. They're first in the NHL in goals against, meaning they've given up the fewest goals against in the NHL. This team very reminiscent to me of what the Los Angeles Kings were for a lot of years, where they don't score a ton, but they get very good goaltending. They're third in possession in Corsi with 54%. You know, the San Jose Sharks team, tough to play against, but they don't have a ton of offensive firepower.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody expected it to be this bad. And, you know, Joe Thornton, is still leading the way offensively along with Logan Couture. We talked about it last segment. Brent Burns just scored his first goal of the season, but it's still a very good team. And, you know, you don't expect the San Jose Sharks to be near the bottom of the league in goals for, but you expect them to be really good defensively, and they still are. And, you know, they've missed Paul Martin. He's injured right now, and he's been a kind of a staple of that top pair with Brent Burns. And I think that is affected Brent Burns. And, you know, everybody looks at, you know, Brent Burns and his lack of goal production, and they say, well, what the heck is going on? This is a guy who scored 29 goals last year. Well, he's got a different D partner, and you can say whatever you want to say, but, you know, that affects a player. And, you know, Tim Hede is a guy that's actually been pretty impressive. Swedish defenseman, a little bit older, he's come in there. So, I mean, they're still very solid defensively with Mark Edward Vlasic, and I really like Brendan Dillon, good physical defenseman. But you nailed it, Drew. I mean, they aren't scoring enough goals right now. You know, Thomas Hertl, they expected more. But for me, the big guy is Joe Pavelski. I mean, guys, Joe Pavelski is a guy, you know, who's a perennial 35-40 goal guy, and he's only got 4 goals in 21 games. So right now they're struggling big time offensively, but still not an easy team to play against. And even though, you know, they haven't got off to a great start, they're still kind of treading water, and they're kind of in the middle of the pack there in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's the San Jose Sharks team that, yeah, as you touched on when you opened the segment, Drew, they just aren't scoring. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's hard to win when you're not scoring. And, you know, you can play excellent defense, but at some point you have to be able to put the puck in the opposing net if you want to win the game. Last night, I guess, against the Vegas Golden Knights, they came back, and that game was an OT game. So, I mean, they put up some goals there. They scored four, so that's not a bad thing, I guess, for a team that's kind of lacking in goals. But
they gave up five.
But they gave, but conversely, to get those four, they gave up five and lost in overtime. So not a good thing for the Sharks. They haven't been very good at the SAP Center either, 6-6-1 at home. So, you know, we talk about teams having to take advantage of their home crowd, and, you know, they clearly haven't been able to do that this year to this point. And you see the loss of a guy like Patrick Marleau, and you see what kind of impact is that having on this team. Where would his 9 goals, and I think he has 7 assists with the Toronto Maple Leafs, be helping this San Jose team, which is obviously lacking for scoring. And I think that's obviously a big element of this team. When you lose a player that you've had on your team for 20 years or 19 years, it's tough to kind of fill that vacuum that he leaves in his wake. And again, San Jose's treading water, as you said, and we'll see if they can kind of get on a run here and get going. But, you know, we saw Joe Thornton's been slowed down a little bit, although if he gets, I think he needs only 5 more assists to pass Dale Hawerchuk on the all-time assist list. Mm-hmm. So if he has a big night against Winnipeg, he could surpass the former great Winnipeg Jet. So we'll see.
We'd be talking about the Sharks as an offensive juggernaut at that point in time.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting team in that, you know, they have the similar pieces that they had to making their cup run, Patrick Marleau notwithstanding. But they're a year older, and Joe Thornton certainly looks a year older. And you know, they don't have any secondary scoring to speak of. As you know, the bottom six for this team is sort of a bit of a wasteland. Timo Meier, who of course was a former first round pick and played in Halifax with Nikolai Ehlers, has only got 2 goals and 2 assists and 4 points through 20 games. So he hasn't made that career development that the Sharks needed. This really is sort of a interesting team in San Jose, in that you shut down their top players. They don't have a ton underneath them to sort of pick up the slack.
Yeah, and we already talked about Joe Pavelski, and we already talked about Brent Burns. They just haven't been performing at the same level. You know, I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, you know, they're struggling big time offensively.
Yeah, the power play is clicking at a 28th in the NHL, so not a very good power play at 15.1%. Not a real surprise, given, of course, that they're struggling to put goals in the net. But it's the best penalty kill in the league, 89.7%, Dave. So, you know, the Jets have to be, you always have to be aware on your special teams, but it's seems like, by all accounts, this should really make for a tight checking, close-knit affair between the Jets and the Sharks tonight. Both teams on the second half of back-to-backs, with the Sharks actually having to do more traveling, I would say, coming from Vegas back to San Jose, whereas the Jets just go up from Anaheim to San Jose.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it's not a true back-to-back for the Jets in the sense that their game was an afternoon game. I don't know what time. I believe San Jose played last night.
I believe it was an evening game
in San Jose. So I'm not 100% sure.
It'll the Jets will have had more time off between
games
than
the Sharks.
Yeah, I mean,
like, that's easy. It's not a true back-to-back in the sense that your game was over by 6 o'clock. They're probably in San Jose by 8:30, 9 o'clock at the latest. And you know,
Jets game was over by 4 o'clock.
It was
1 o'clock Pacific.
Right. So there you go. So, I mean, you get in, you have a dinner, you relax, and it's not the same sort of traditional. You're getting in at 1 o'clock in the morning and you're going to feel exhausted the next day. You know, I don't believe the Jets are having a skate today in San Jose. At least one isn't scheduled. Maybe some guys will hit the ice. But as far as I know from looking at the Jets' schedule, they're not taking the ice today. The only change we know to the lineup for Winnipeg as of right now is that Steve Mason will be in net for the Jets, which Coach Maurice said he had already made the decision prior to last game. It was kind of, you know, he had talked earlier in the week about having a plan for his goalies. So he had Steve Mason penciled in, and, you know, Steve Mason's been playing extraordinarily well. And again, if Steve Mason can do what he's done and keep the Jets, you know, keep that solid play alive, then really the Jets just need to get a couple of early goals. That's really going to kind of shake the Sharks, because the Sharks have shown, aside from last night, that they're struggling to get those goals for. So it'll be interesting to see what the strong power play does against the strong penalty kill. But again, I think that if the Jets can continue to play the game they've been playing, they should be able to win this game.
Yeah, you mentioned Steve Mason. He's going to be in net for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. You know, I think that's the right decision, obviously. I know it's not the sort of traditional back-to-back, but he's been playing so well that at this point in time, you want to keep his good feelings going. You know, he played so well in Los Angeles on Wednesday. You don't want him to sit for another, you know, week or 10 days, because really this is the only back-to-back situation. Next week they have Monday at home to the Wild, Wednesday against in Denver against the Avs. You got Friday against the Golden Golden Knights, and I believe it's Sunday at home to the Blackhawks, if I'm not mistaken.
Senators, I thought?
Maybe the Senators. On the Sunday. So, you know, this is the opportunity to get Steve Mason, keep his good vibes going as the team continues on the finishes off this four-game road trip.
Yeah, I mean, it's a luxury for any coach to have. When you have two goaltenders who are going, then why would you want to just... You can't afford to have Steve Mason sitting for 12 or 13 or 14 days like he did in between starts. I think that you need to keep him engaged, because the fact is, if Connor Hellebuck hits a snag, it hits a bump, you don't want a goaltender who's completely cold and then potentially have two goalies that are cold. So while Connor Hellebuck, and you have to plan, I think you have to plan for every sort of negative potential, right? And I think the reality is, if Connor Hellebuck has a bad game or two, then you need to know that Steve Mason's ready to step in. If Connor Hellebuck just keeps playing the way he's playing, then Steve Mason comes in periodically and he just spells off some relief. And the reality is, that's just the way it's going to go, because that's the way the team is projected since the beginning of the season. So I think it's a luxury for a coach to have. I don't think Paul Maurice is too upset about having two goaltenders who are going well.
No, it's a good problem to have. When we come back, Dan Rusinowski, the San Jose Sharks radio broadcaster, is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Sharks ahead of the Jets' visit to San Jose later on tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Dan Rusinowski. Dan is the Sharks radio broadcaster. The Jets and the Sharks, a 9 o'clock puck drop Central Time, 7 o'clock in San Jose tonight. Dan, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Dan, last night in Vegas, the Sharks had a bit of an offensive explosion, scoring 4 goals. Unfortunately, a bit of a defensive calamity, giving up 5 on the back end. Sort of what happened last night in Vegas? It certainly wasn't in keeping with the Sharks season thus far.
Well, no, they've been right at the top of the defensive standings all season long, and they're going to continue to be there. It was one of those crazy nights where actually the Sharks fell victim to what a lot of teams have fallen victim to in Las Vegas, and that is the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights come out really hard. They skate fast. They're a well-put-together team. And in spite of all of the adversity that they've had with the injuries, the goaltending getting hurt, in fact, one of them, I'm not even sure what happened last night, left the game. That was Malcolm Subban coming in the third period. They still managed to generate a lot of offensive chances. And so the Sharks weathered that storm, came back, and to their credit, were able to tie the game. Unfortunately, a goaltender interference coach's challenge limited their ability to win in regulation, and they ended up having to settle for a single point with the unfortunate moment in overtime. So I don't think it's anything unusual. It does happen on occasion, but the Sharks are looking forward tonight to facing one of the better teams in the Western Conference and looking forward to a good game.
Dan, how relieved was Brent Burns to score his first goal of the year?
You know, it all started in a shootout a few days ago against Anaheim. He had gone basically a half a season with 2 goals, going back to February 19th of last year. And he was squeezing his stick a little tightly, maybe, you know, doing everything he could. And finally, he got that result in the shootout that the puck actually did go in, and it was a beautiful, beautiful goal. Now, it's not hockey, but at least he got some reward for all the work that he's been putting in. And he's been doing great things defensively. He's been on the ice for a lot of really good defensive plays, and was again last night in Vegas. But when it went in, I think he was energized. And from that moment, it almost galvanized the team into that big comeback that they had because of the result that he had and because of that that burst of enthusiasm that came from it, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and the Sharks are 5-2-1 away from the SAP Center, but just 6-6-1 at home. Any reason they seem to be playing well outside of their home barn?
Well, they've always been a good road team. And I think it comes back to defensive hockey. You don't have the last change. Oftentimes you have to travel, you're weary, you know, you guys know all about that, being in the Western Conference and having to go back east. So in my mind, it's just a dedication to a strong, solid, hard-hitting defensive style of game that that promotes blocking shots and being in position, getting the great goaltending, of course, from Martin Jones and from Arundel that's given them that chance. So I attribute it to the style of hockey that Pete DeBoer likes to coach.
Dan Rusinowski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dan is the Sharks radio broadcaster. The Jets and the Sharks, 9 p.m. Central Time, puck drop tonight. A game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Dan, Logan Couture's got 11 goals for the Sharks, but aside from that, goal scoring has been hard to come by. How concerned is the team, is the organization, with sort of that lack of secondary scoring?
Well, obviously you want to have a balanced scoring through your lineup, especially when you're a four-line team as the Sharks are. So basically, you're in a situation where you just have to keep bearing down and going for it. They knew that they were going to be in a position like this to a degree because of the departure of Patrick Marleau, and they knew that they were going to replace that scoring, 27 goals last year from him, with a variety of younger players that were going to step into increased roles. And so that's a work in progress. That's something that you don't worry about in the space of 3 to 5 games. You look at a full body of work, and I think that the Sharks are pretty confident that over the season, with whatever they decide to do with their personnel, that they're going to be in a position where it's going to be all right, and that's the part that matters the most.
You know, Dan, I want to go back to Brent Burns here for a second, because you watch the team more than anybody, but just as much as anybody. How much does he miss Paul Martin, his regular D partner, who's been out of the lineup since early October?
You want to know the truth? I think that the reaction to that is absolutely zero. I think that Joachim Ryan has stepped in and has done many of the things that Paul Martin does. He plays a similar brand of hockey in the sense that you can see his intelligence being executed on the ice whenever there's a play. He seems to always be in a good position. He makes the right moves. He's a very good skater, too. And I get back to that intelligence. He's not the biggest guy, but neither is Paul Martin. And they both use what size they have to their advantage. It's almost as if they're mathematicians or civil engineers out there deciding what the exact right angle is and what vector they need to do to go in into the corner, and they're able to calculate all of that at the speed of NHL play. So I think he's had a very strong rookie season. Of course, he's going to have his ups and his downs, but it's been pretty much mostly ups for Joachim Ryan. So I don't think has anything to do with Brent Burns. I think he's just been fantastic for much of the year in his own zone and just isn't getting the results offensively, at least in the goals that he would like.
Dan, having gone a quarter of the season without Patrick Marleau for the first time in, I think, 20 seasons, where is his absence most felt?
Well, that's interesting you would say that. Obviously, you look at the production, and he's still producing for Toronto. We knew he would. I think his veteran leadership, which is somewhat underrated at times, is part of it. The fact that he can settle people down because of the way that he plays. But it's nothing unusual. It's basically you're missing a guy who scored 27 goals last year and he's probably going to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So, how do you replace players like that? You really don't. You have to find from within your group of young players the people that can step forward and begin to take some of those roles. But you don't just replace Patrick Marleau.
Dan Rusinowski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dan is the San Jose Sharks radio broadcaster. Talking about the Sharks, as the Jets head into San Jose, they'll play them puck drop 9 o'clock tonight on TSN 1290. Dan, Timo Meier was a former first-round pick, 9th overall. You know, we know him here in Winnipeg having because Nikolaj Ehlers played with him in Halifax of the QMJHL. Ehlers has obviously had a tremendous start to his NHL career, yet Meier is struggling. He had 6 points in 34 games last season, 4 points in 20 games this year. Is there concern that Meier may not reach that top 10 pedigree that he had when he was drafted 9th overall?
Not on this radio broadcast. I don't think the coaches are concerned about that. It's a work in progress too. You look at his willingness to get into the dirty areas. In the comeback last night, he was intimately involved and didn't get a point in some of those goals, but was really involved in some of the plays, driving to the net, causing screens, getting involved physically. And so I don't think that's going to turn anybody off. And he's making plays, too. They've got him on a line recently with Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski the last couple of games, and he's looked really good. You notice his shots and attempts toward the net are pretty solid. He had 7 shots the other day. So I can't remember how many he had last night, but still, he's getting chances to the net, and they're going to start going in for him. He scored a couple of games ago, and I think that they're reasonably happy with the way he's progressed so far, and the results are going to come for him.
You know, Kevin LeBlanc had a breakthrough year last year, and I know that he struggled a little bit offensively as of late. How have you seen his game in the second year? Are you thinking that maybe he's experiencing a little bit of sophomore slump?
Fits and starts, and that usually happens. First of all, when you've had some success, it doesn't matter whether you're Brent Burns or whether whether you're Joachim Ryan in your first year as an NHLer. You're going to have people who now have seen you and obviously treat you a little bit differently, which means you have to adjust your game. I always like to talk about NHL players as the guys who worked reasonably hard in high school and got straight A's, and then they went to Harvard and found out that everybody had straight A's, and they're going to have to adjust their game in order to be at the top of the class again. And that happens in the NHL every day. So that's what I see from LeBanc. He's learning, and he's still having his moments where he does good things, and he's having moments where he realizes he's got to change his game a little bit. So he's been in and out of the lineup. He's been back to the AHL, to the Barracuda, no problem with that. And the one thing he does have is he's got a really good nose around the net. He can really shoot the puck. So that's a strength that you almost can't teach. You can practice to hone to perfection, but he's got that ability to find holes and to make plays in offensive zone. So he's learning all of the rest of it, and again, he's progressing.
You know, Dan, you spoke earlier in our interview about the commitment to team defense, and the Sharks have the second-best penalty kill in the NHL right now. Last year, they were 18th. Obviously, it's only a quarter of the way into the season, but what changes have they made to kind of see that increase in penalty kill effectiveness?
Penalty killing is a combination of things. It's great goaltending, which the Sharks have consistently had, and it's basically hard work, but it's also just an understanding between the personnel as to what needs to be done. And I think in recent times they had a bit of a struggle with it, but they've traditionally been a very solid penalty killing team. With Martin Jones and, you know, with Dave Barr coming in to help Rob Zettler on the defense with some of the special teams, I think they've just made a couple little adjustments, and again, that's dealing with teams that know them very well. And so that's been a big part of why they've been so good. They've also managed to be relatively conservative in taking penalties, which means that doesn't mean that they're not playing an aggressive game. They are, but they're doing it in a very clean way and not taking too many penalties. And that's another thing, too. You don't want to have those things add up and put pressure on your penalty killers and then mess up the way that the coaches want to roll their lines and play their defense. So a combination of all those things, I think. But I credit the coaching staff with getting everything organized and getting everything set up with the personnel that they have and the guys are executing.
Dan, we've talked a lot about individual players, but when you consider that the Sharks are at the bottom of the league in goals scored, can you put your finger on why this team as a group, as a collective, is struggling to put the puck in the net?
One word. No, I really can't. I think it's just something that happens in the NHL during the course of the year, especially in the West. It's just one of these things is you see a lot of goals with some teams early on, and then everything clamps down. I think that the Sharks have been just so strongly promoting solid team defense and that style of hockey that maybe they're in that mindset, but there's no barrier to creativity, or there's no stopping anybody like Brent Burns or Joe Thornton or Joe Pavelski from, in quotes, going whenever there's an opportunity. And that's why you see, you know, Logan Couture coming into his own. I think Pavelski and Thornton obviously have struggled a little bit with some injuries. Pete DeBoer said last week that the captain had a couple of bumps and bruises that hampered him a bit. And, of course, Joe Thornton is coming off really serious knee surgery, which, in my mind, qualifies him not only for the Hockey Hall of Fame, but for Superman status, because he was able to come back at age 38 from a torn ACL and torn MCL, play in the playoffs with that injury, and then have surgery and be on the ice for game one of the preseason if he wanted to. And he was right there and ready to go. But as you know, there are, you know, as you could say, ups and downs with that recovery during the course of a year with surgery that serious for any age, let alone 38, and let alone a superstar like Joe Thornton. So, you know, he just scored a big goal the other night. He's still producing points. He just passed Joe Sakic on the all-time assist list last night with 2 assists, and his game is coming right along. So a combination of those things, I think, once you start to see the bumps and bruises heal a little bit, then they're going to have a little more depth to their scoring. But having said that, Joel Ward's come up with a couple of big goals recently. Chris Tierney, the same thing. And last night, Mikhail Botker got the game-tying goal that got the Sharks a point. So I think you're starting to see the results pay off for all of the work that the Sharks are putting in. And again, it's something that as the season goes on, the adjustment being without Marleau, et cetera, I think that that all contributes to what you've seen in the total numbers.
Dan Rusinowski is the San Jose Sharks play-by-play broadcaster. Dan, appreciate your time. Have a great call tonight. We'll do it again real soon.
I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Dan. Thanks again. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk about the Jets and the Sharks. We'll touch on the Moose. We'll give our Grey Cup predictions. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Grey Cup Saturday is going to follow us. Of course, the big game goes tomorrow in the nation's capital. The 105th Grey Cup coverage really all day here on TSN 1290 and on TSN. I believe kickoff right around 5:30 p.m. between the Argonauts and the Stampeders. We'll give our Grey Cup predictions coming up in this segment. Want to remind you, though, next Saturday, we're going to be at CF Polo Park as part of Toy Mountain, the big holiday drive. The holiday season is upon us. So we're going to be live on location next Saturday. Looking for something to do, bring the family down. You can watch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in addition to listening to us. So we'll be at CF Polo Park next Saturday, a great cause. We hope to see you out there marveling at what we actually look like in real life. But please bring an unused and unwrapped toy if you're going to just gawk at us for 3 hours. It's not an unreasonable request, is it?
Nope, seems okay. Fair.
Jets and the Sharks, like we said, tonight they're going to be doing battle in San Jose. The Jets look to either improve on the road trip to 3-1 or maybe 2-1-1. Or if they fall into defeat at the hands of the Sharks, it'll be a 2-2 road trip. And anytime you can go 500 on a road trip, You're pretty much happy with that. That's sort of the old adage, you know, win half your games away from your rink and then win two-thirds at home. You're going to likely be a playoff team. You're going to be likely in a good position. The Jets have already set themselves up to be in a good position by winning two of the first three on the road trip, as we talked about way back when at the start of the show, over almost 3 hours ago.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think this is a game. In fact, I would almost suggest, though, Drew, like you're right. You wouldn't be upset if you finished 2-2 because, you know, fine, you got at least two wins. But I think there's an expectation, which Ez touched on earlier in the show, that this team just has an expectation that they're going to win more games. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, this is a team that really expects to finish this road trip 3-1 and continuing to vie for first place in the Western Conference. So, I mean, again, I think there's a bit of a disbelief here in Winnipeg, like almost like, when is the bubble going to burst? When do you anticipate this team coming back down to earth? But they've shown, and again, there's things that the team needs to work on. There's no question about it. They're not giant beaters every single night. And a lot of this is attributed to their goaltending and the play of both Steve Mason and Connor Hellebuck. But at the end of the day, the team just seems to continue to play very even and not change their style, whether they're winning or losing. You know, Coach Maurice likes to say, not trying to score two goals in one shift. So there really hasn't been that. If they get down, we have to, you know what I mean? They have to get back into the game. So, you know, they play that full 60-minute game as opposed to, we need to do this all in the next few minutes. So there's no panic, which, again, is something we're seeing with the farm club as well. And, again, I just see that they have an expectation of winning now, not just kind of just treading water.
I should make mention that this final segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, they have two shows. The 7:15 show is sold out. There's still a few tickets left for the 10 o'clock show. Come see Lachlan Patterson tonight at Rumors Comedy Club. Of course, if you're looking for a place for your holiday party, my understanding is that there might be a little bit of space left at Rumors, and New Year's Eve is coming up soon as well. So if you're looking for plans for New Year's Eve, rumorscomedyclub.com. You know, you mentioned that the Jets are playing well, the Moose are playing well. I mean, it's sort of remarkable the stretch that they're on in Winnipeg in professional hockey. Jets are 8-2-1. The Moose are 9-1 since November 2nd. The month of November has probably not seen a performance like that on, you know, from their two professional hockey teams. Well, I don't know what city has bested that record for 17-3-1 for your two professional teams in the month of November. Is an incredible record there, Ez.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, we expected both of these teams to be better this year, but the records that they've had over the last stretch is pretty incredible, winning all seven games at Bell MTS Play. So it's excellent. It bodes very well for the minor league team that you are seeing success from guys like Jack Roslovic and Mason Appleton and others. And, you know, we know how well the Jets are playing, so we certainly haven't seen anything like this since the Moose came over from St. John's, but it's definitely great for local hockey fans.
Dave, the Moose in action tonight in Grand Rapids again, or did they
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. So they were in Grand Rapids last night. Yep. They won in Grand Rapids, playing in Milwaukee against the Admirals tonight. Game you can hear on moosehockey.com, right, as we have the Jets pregame coverage here on the station. Then the big contest of tomorrow is the 105th Grey Cup. And it's the Argos and Ricky Ray, the veteran presence of Ricky Ray, against the Calgary Stampeders, who've been the best team in the CFL as all season long, led by, of course, Bo Levi Mitchell. How are you seeing the Grey Cup? How do you think the big game in Ottawa is going to shape up tomorrow between the Stamps and the Argos?
I really don't care when the Winnipeg Blue Bombers aren't in the Grey Cup, but I know that
you haven't cared for a lot of years then.
These two teams are pretty evenly matched, and as you mentioned, Calgary had the best record throughout the season. I know James Wilder Jr. just recently won Rookie of the Year. I'm going to go with the Toronto Argos.
In an upset. You're calling the upset? You're putting some money down on it, saying that, you know, 7-point dogs is my understanding. Is that, that's what, at least what the line opened as, the Stamps are 7-point favorites. But Ezzie is going to buck the trend and says Vegas doesn't know what they're talking about in this instance. Dave, your thoughts on the 105th Grey Cup tomorrow, wrapping up what's been, by all accounts, a very well-done Grey Cup week in the nation's capital.
Well, I could feign interest in the Grey Cup in the CFL in general.
You just don't care, eh?
There's an apathy. I've watched 0 minutes of CFL football this year, and
even the Bombers.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm so focused on the Jets and the Moose. I don't have time for really even watching the Jays, which is like my go to when I'm not paying attention to hockey. It's hard. So no, I just haven't spent any time watching the CFL. So I won't even pretend to have any sort of informed opinion.
Okay, well, how about that? That's at least honest analysis. I can give you props for the honesty surrounding that analysis. I'm actually going to side with Ezzie here. When I was on Tuesday afternoon, I thought that 7 points is too many points for the Argos. So I think I'm going to take the Argos in an upset, because really, who doesn't like the underdog? And wouldn't that be a great story for Ricky Ray winning one more Grey Cup with the Toronto Argos? And we know that the Stamps like to choke when push comes to shove more often than not. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thank you to all of our guests, Dan Rusinowski, Sharks broadcaster, Kyle Keefe, Avalanche studio host. We had Scott Billick of NHL.com and Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes via your Android device. Subscribe to the show, get it sent to you each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.